Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WAMRDB, Atlanta Mix Radio, the woman's station, the new look and feel of radio. We are now syndicated. You can find us on Blog Talk, Mixcloud, SoundCloud, the TuneIn app, YouTube, Spreaker, and Facebook Live. We'll be discussing a wide array of topics such as domestic violence, Me Too, sex trafficking, and health. Check us out on the World Wide Web at www.AtlantaMixRadio.com. Atlanta Mix Radio, the woman station, the new look and feel of radio.
Nothing beats the moment you see that.
Cool!
That's your child's eyes opening up to a world of possibilities.
I didn't know it could do that!
Because one trip to the forest can spark a world of difference.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go, like hiking, canoeing, fishing, or camping. Or create your own adventure with family and friends, and you might just see this. Your moment's out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Come chill with me at the Back to Intimacy pre-Valentine's Day event featuring love, sensual poet extraordinaire, me, The Next Level. Performing live at Club 6340, Riverdale GA's hotspot for the grown and sexy, February 11th, 2018, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., located at 6340 Highway 85, Riverdale, GA 30274. Contact us at 404-392-4273. Dress to impress.
Guys, you're listening to WMRDB Atlanta Mix Radio, paying the purpose, Miss Shonda Roberts with her guest, author Miss Valeria Brown, on our WMRDB Democracy. For those who are listening in, you by phone, you can press 1. and give us a call at 516-387-1251. So a little history about Miss Valerie Brown. Guest is a domestic violence survivor, and she's doing everything in her power to help other women have the same fate. In addition to founding the Lady Be Free Resource Center for Women, Miss Brown recently released a book called Reflection of a Survivor to encourage women to be free themselves from abusive relationships. Miss Brown is also spearheading a major fundraising effort to provide transitional housing, which is such a much needed thing for women, for a 6 to 12 month period for women exiting the homeless shelter, along with comprehensive services including case management, mental health counseling, mentorship, life skills, and financial literacy programs. To receive more information, you can contact Ms. Brown on her Facebook page, Lady Be Free Resources, or at 855-585-FREE. That means 3733 for y'all that can't spell. But anyway, we got Ms. Shonda Roberts on, and we have our guest, Ms. Brown, on. Ms. Brown, welcome to the Domestic Violence Show tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
Wonderful. Ms. Roberts, welcome to your show.
Good evening. Thank you, Karima. Thank you, Valerie, for giving us your time tonight. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for asking. I'm glad to be here.
Well, basically, we're just going to have some regular conversation, talk about domestic violence, but we first want to discuss your program and what it is that you are doing, what you're planning on doing, and how you became a survivor. We want to hear your testimony. So if you can go ahead and just let us know how you started Lady Be Free Resource Center.
Okay. Yeah, so that's quite a long story, but I'll see if I can shorten it. Lady Be Free was, me being a survivor. You go through these changes and you go through different transitions. And as I was exiting the relationship, I was really trying to get myself together and figure out where did I go wrong and what can I do to better myself. And so I went to college, received my undergraduate degree in business administration. And at the time that I was going through the abusive relationship, I was attending Bethune-Cookman University, but I dropped out of college during that time. And so after coming home and obtaining my bachelor's degree, I decided to go back to Bethune-Cookman because I'm one of those individuals where I don't like being defeated. And so I felt like because my life had taken a different turn for the worse and getting in this relationship and dropping out of college, I wanted to go back to that college that I dropped out of. Bethune-Cookman had a program, Masters of Science program in transformative leadership. And I said, wow, let me see what this is all about. And so I was interested, looked at the curriculum and decided to join the school again. And so through that, joining that particular program, we learned all about civic participation. And Bethune-Cookman's mantra is enter to learn, depart to serve. And I'm saying to myself, I want to enter to learn, but I want to depart to make money. But lo and behold, there was a lot around that. And as I continued to matriculate through the program, I said, well, what can I do to my, what can I give back to my community? I started thinking about those things that I might be able to do. And I said, well, I don't do hair. I don't, that's what my mindset was. And I was talking to the division chair, and she says, Valerie, think about something that is purposeful to you, something that you have overcome that you might be able to help someone else overcome. And at the time that I was going through domestic violence, I really didn't know what it was. I was 21 years old. I knew that it wasn't right, but I didn't define it. I didn't call it domestic violence. And so when I came into the realization that that's what I was experiencing, I said, okay, well, let me create this company. And in my mind, I started off, very small in thinking, saying, well, I can put together, this company create an organization that will help other women who are in the shoes that I once wore, give them, you know, connections to resources within their community to help them throughout their process of getting out of that abusive relationship and becoming self-sufficient. Well, in that, I when I started out doing that and thinking of, okay, well, let me connect them here, let me connect these people, I said, well, wow, there are several resources in our communities. And, you know, so I said, well, let me just start off by offering two-hour comprehensive domestic violence workshops. And I started doing that, you know, going to housing authorities, anyone that had asked me to come and speak and share my story. And I built a program that would, you know, it wasn't just a presentation and talking. We actually do activities during our comprehensive program. And after I started doing that, I started getting invitations for empowerment speaking and participating in community events where I would go out and put out educational materials to make others aware. And through those connections, open up many other avenues. And so I also provide survivor mentorship programs in local homeless shelters. And this is where I found one of the major disparities in my particular county. You know, mm-hmm. you have survivors of domestic violence who go into a homeless shelter and they're there for, you know, whether it's 30 to 45 days. But what happens when that time is lapsed? You know, what happens mm-hmm. when the time is over? If they don't have a decent job, you know, they can't afford fair market value rent. Many of them, they have, you know, told their family members, you know, and they've left this person and gone back three and four times. So sometimes the family member is not as open to welcome them back, especially if you've brought violence to their home once he found out that they were there. So the survivor goes through many different phases in that time span. And so the disparity that I found is that a lot of these women who are in these shelters, you know, they're there for just that, a shelter, but no one is really truly teaching them how to now become sitting that shelter environment. And so this is what our major, we're gearing up for a major fundraiser to build a transitional facility where women that are exiting the shelter environment will come to our program. And it is a program. It's not just a place to lay your head, but it gives you the skills that you will need to not only attain self-sufficiency, but maintain it as well. And so that's how Lady Be Free was formulated. The name came from, I love ladybugs. I absolutely love ladybugs. And a friend of mine, she started calling me Lady B. And when I came up with the name, I said, you know what, Lady B is me, but, you know, I'm saying to women, you know, lady, you can be free. And so, and that's how the name was formulated. And this is how the organization has incepted. We'll be 6 years old come May this year. And it just
congratulations.
Thank you. It amazes me to see how far it has come. You know, I do work a full-time job. I'm an ethics and compliance officer. But, you know, that thing about, you know, when you find your true purpose in life, and it's that mm-hmm. thing that keeps nudging at you. It's that thing that you're passionate about that just won't let you stop. You know, you could be, you know, thinking one thing, but your mind goes to the business. And so I think that, you know, going through, not I think, I know that going through what I have, and many other survivors, you know, you realize what your purpose is through that. It takes some time, but, you know, my purpose is to help others, you know, get out of those abusive relationships and also to be free, because you can be out of the relationship but still bound internally, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's a lot that you've done so far in your 6 years. I am... You know, I'm a survivor as well. And we are two years in. So I have a lot of work to do, but I know we've done so much already in those 2 years. But the sad thing is there is a lot to do, because there are so many women who are affected mm-hmm. by domestic violence. And there are so
Absolutely.
Many women who are still in the relationship. There are some who are survivors, but they're not mm-hmm. yet ready to tell their story, and they're not ready
right.
to share with the world what happened to them. I know for me, it was very embarrassing, or I felt mm-hmm. embarrassed, and I felt ashamed, and I felt like people were going to judge me, and I felt like, I'm not telling anybody. If you didn't know, you weren't going to know
mm-hmm.
from me, because I wasn't
mm-hmm.
going to tell. How
mm-hmm.
did you come out to share your story? Who did you share it to first, and how did you feel?
Yeah. So I trust me. I understand wholeheartedly what you're saying, because I was embarrassed as well. You know, you've told your family and friends this guy that you're dating is the best thing since sliced bread. And,
yes.
You know, you don't want to go back and say, hey, I made a wrong decision. I made the wrong choice of this person. He's not all the what I thought he was. Shonda, it actually took me 20 years to tell my story.
Wow.
I initially, when my abuser, when he threatened my life with a gun, came to my parents' house when they were not there, I was just really afraid. I remember walking away from his car thinking that he was going to shoot me in my back. And, you know, I reached out to a cousin of mine and said, hey, you know, somebody's threatened my life, but I didn't tell her everything, right? I just told that part because I said, I got to tell somebody, you know, because I really thought that he was going to kill me. But I released my story and told my truth 20 years later. I will say this, and you know, it's not for everybody, but I'll tell you for me, after releasing my book in March of last year, the amount of support and love that I received from family members and friends, I felt like I should have said something sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Because they did the opposite of what I thought would happen, you know. But it was such a release for me. It was so liberating, because although I was free, and I thought I was free in my mind, and there were certain parts of my life, you know, as you go on in life, certain things will affect you in different ways, because even though you might become free, there's something that's called residue that every now and again, you know, it shows itself. And when I released my story and owned my truth, because that was my truth, what I experienced, it cultivated me into who I am. When I released that story, it was a huge burden lifted off of me. Although I was going along and had been helping people since I started Lady Be Free, just releasing that story and releasing my story liberated me in such a great way. And I did the largest Excel I could have ever done. It was like, you know, like it's out now, you know. So yeah, it took me 20 years, but I certainly. You know, I don't, you know, nothing in life that I've gone through I take for granted or I regret. So me holding it for as long, it was just my journey. Some people may go through it and tell someone the next day or the same day. We each have a different journey to go along. But for me, I held it in for 20 years. So
wow.
I'm certainly glad to be free. Yeah.
I have a question for both of you all. I got a caller that's calling in too. Got a caller from 615 area code.
That's me, the next level. How you doing?
Okay.
Hi.
Okay. Then.
All right. So we're talking to we're talking about the fact that this major effort for transitioning housing, from what I understand, from doing a couple shows with Shonda and a couple other guests, there really is not enough transitioning housing that's going on. I need for somebody, whoever is moving around with the phone, it's distorting the show, so you can't do that. All right. So my question is, Mrs. Brown, is that true where the transitioning housing is a problem for women once they leave the shelter because of government? Is it a HUD situation? What's the problem with the fact that the shelters only hold the women for so long? Why has there not been any sustainability in that aspect?
Yeah, well, I can't tell you exactly why there hasn't been more funding toward that effort. But I can tell you that there is a significant lack of the transitional housing. You know, these shelter environments, they have grants and they have rules and regulations that they have to adhere to. And I remember I was speaking to one of the directors at a homeless shelter. I said, why can't you guys? Because what I found myself doing, you know, as I had, you know, these mentees, I would go in, you know, I go in once a week and I'm paired up with a survivor. And I found myself, you know, going to that director saying, hey, can you please give her an additional week? Can you please give her an additional 2 weeks? Can you give her an additional month? You know, I was going in asking for this additional time. And I, to one point, I just said to him, I said, look, why can't you guys just extend the time for these particular women? Because she's in a, you know, she's in a bind, and I'm having this dialogue with him. And he's, Lady B, there are a lot of homeless people in this world. And if we keep the same homeless people in, then there's still some people that's still out there. They're out in the cold. They don't have anywhere to go either. So it's just a revolving door that happens. And the survivors, they kind of get in the shuffle of all of that. And regardless of what the situation is, they still have a certain time frame to stay as well. So this is why, you know, for me, you know, especially when you have an organization, whether it's a nonprofit, whether it's a for-profit, your organization should be a solution to a problem. And so I do know that it's a problem, and my goal is to be a solution for that particular problem. And the thing about, you know, domestic violence, the numbers are massive. You know, statistics says that mm-hmm. 1 in 4 every woman will experience domestic violence in their lifetime. And I tend to say it's more than that because I didn't report it. So how many other millions of women don't report it, okay? So even in that situation, there are a lot of organizations that are, you know, Shonda has her nonprofit that supports survivors of domestic violence. I have mine. There are many other entities. There's more. I don't care if we put up 100 transitional facilities. It's still not enough. You know, sometimes we get into these mentality, especially, and I've seen this a lot, you know, we get this crab in a bucket syndrome. Well, if I know about this, I can't tell you because I don't want you to do it. We have to get away, you know, just leave that alone, because there are people that are out here that are dying. There are people that are, you know, I always see this vision in my head with hands just reaching to me to help them. If I could put these people in my home, I probably would do that. But, you know, when I sign contracts going into these homeless shelters to provide these services, unfortunately, I cannot do that. And so my goal is to create a platform in which I can. And so, and that's what my fundraising efforts will be. And whether it's I start off with a 50-unit building or a 2-unit building, I have to start somewhere, because there are many women. You know, I only see a certain subset, but there are, I'm sure, millions of women out there in the same predicament. You know, sometimes they stay in their relationship because, you know, they know if I go to a shelter, hey, I'm only going to be there for so long, you know, or whatever the situation is. They don't want to leave, you know, the environment they have. They may live in a really nice home versus going to a shelter. Whatever the situation is, I would like to be the catalyst to help them get out of that abusive relationship and into their own self-sufficiency.
Why? So when you mentioned in your book, your mentioned that your abuse was verbal, right?
It was verbal and physical.
It was both verbal and physical.
So verbal and physical.
Did the verbal start first? The verbal came first.
Yes, the verbal came first, and there were many different signs. There's something that's called a power and control wheel. You can Google it, look it up. But looking at that power and control wheel, it shows you different areas in which you could be being abused. You know, I mm-hmm. didn't think I was in a domestic abusive relationship, because when it started, I didn't have bruises on my face. But the verbal abuse, I tend to think the verbal abuse, although the physical abuse, yes, it does hurt. But that verbal abuse, it lasts longer, because it's now your psychological mindset. It just tears down your self-esteem to when you do leave the relationship, you know, you still have that sense of unworthiness. Some of us, and I'm not saying everybody, but my experience. So, yes, it was verbal and physical. You know, it started off with the intimidation, you know, giving mm-hmm. you that mean look. Or, you know, if you're on the phone and he doesn't like that you're on the phone, he takes your phone, he's throwing the phone down. you know, destroying your personal property, causing harms to your animal, things that you love, he wants to destroy. So domestic violence starts off in many different forms. For me, it didn't just start with the hitting. It started off with the verbal abuse and other little tactics to show me he wanted to show me that he was in control. And because I didn't, you know, whatever reason, you know, that wasn't enough for him. He wanted to take it to the physical abuse. And, he tried to kill me several times. I remember him even taking a pillow, putting it over my face, and he was 275 pounds. And my body was just meshed into a mattress, and he's trying to kill me. And all I could do was pray God to get him off of me, because my strength couldn't get the 275-pound man off of me. It wasn't going to happen, okay? So there were different forms of abuse. I used to work overnight at a hotel, and he would come and sit there the entire shift with me.
Yes, God.
The entire shift. 11 to 7, he lost his job because he wasn't sleeping at night. He was sitting up at work with me, watching to see who I'm talking to, making sure I'm not having any other conversations with people, you know. So there are different forms of it. You know, I remember, you know, I try to think back some years ago, you know, where was the sign? Where did I? And I remember, you know, talking to him on the phone. I would seclude myself from other people. I'd go in the room and lock the door. I had two roommates at the time. And I would seclude myself and just stay on the phone with him all the time, you know, just making everything about him. I stopped talking to my friends, you know, stopped going out with my friends because he didn't want me to. You know, he said, oh, you know, I love you and I just want to spend so much time with you and I want to talk to you, you know. And the time that I did go out with one of my friends, he didn't like that too much. And so he showed up to the party, you know, and forced me, grabbed me by the neck, forced me in the car, you know. And that was the first time that he put his hands on me. And I should have left then, but I stayed. And it only got worse as time progressed. So, yes, it did start off with verbal and a lot of intimidation. And it just continued to escalate from there. So when you see the sign, you know what? Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, when you see the signs, recognize them for what they are. When a person shows you who they are, Maya Angelou says, believe them. You can't get it better. You can't get it no better from nobody else but that person. So you have to believe them and know them for what they are.
Yes.
Hey, everybody, we are listening to Pain to Purpose, Ms. Shonda Roberts, and also our special guest, author of a wonderful book, Reflection of a Survivor. It's way to her gift back to the world in order to encourage women to free themselves from abusive relationships. We also have a caller from 615 Next Level, and we also have a caller from 786 area code. Caller, do you have any comments?
Are you talking? No, I'm just listening to their stories and just kind of like absorbing it in and just making sure if a situation arises that I see maybe somebody falling into, I could give them some information and maybe help them. But I definitely understand how in every scenario, when you don't say anything, you empower the situation to continue to happen again and again. So I definitely agree with what you were saying. When you see the signs, immediately, you know, they always say your greatest challenge is yourself. So you have to accept it for what it is and not start lying to yourself and believing that somehow or another you can change who this person is. Because as a man,
absolutely,
I can say that most of the time that if a man is an abuser and he's in an abusive relationship, and the woman is allowing him to do it, he has no reason to change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she hasn't put him in a position to change.
Right.
This is true.
I have learned that you teach people how to treat you. And
yeah,
when
true.
I heard Valerie's story is a little bit different than mine. My abuse started with physical. The very first thing he did was hit me. And it came out of nowhere because he whined and dined me and bought me everything, and I thought he was the best thing ever. And that's how I described him to everybody. So when he did hit me, all of a sudden, it shocked me. But not only did it shock me, he instilled fear in me. And immediately after he hit me, he started feeling regret, or what he called regret. And then it was, oh, I love you, I'm so sorry, I'll never do it again. And because I was so young, my abuse started at 15, I was thrown off, like, hey, what just happened here? You know, and I called myself leaving him. I left him, but he started stalking me. He was coming to my school, and he was, you know, everywhere I was, there he was. If I was at a party, if I was at the mall, if I was at the store, there he was. And when Valerie was talking about how her abuser was at her job, I went through that same thing. I married my abuser at 19, and I was with him until 22, 23 years old. So my abuse lasted a very long time, and it was more physical than it was verbal. If it was verbal, it started, verbal was during the time it was physical. There was never a verbal incident that didn't follow a physical incident, because in between those times, he was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He would buy me everything. He would talk to me rough, abuse me, and then take me shopping. And that was like a cycle, because he felt like, and I made him feel that way, that if he bought me something, I wouldn't leave him. And that wasn't necessarily the case. I just knew that was when he was his calmest. If he was doing something for me, he was calm. He wasn't mad. Let me just take what he's going to give me because he's not upset with me. And I did leave him over and over and over again. But every time I left him, made it worse. And then when he would find me and literally pick me up and bring me back, the fights were worse. And I gave up. I got tired of running.
And I got tired of running. You know, a lot of people will ask the question, you know, why did you stay? And my answer for me is because I loved him more than I loved myself at that time.
Yeah. That's true. Especially around, you know, I really felt like I could change him. I felt like I loved the hell out of him. I felt that, you know, eventually, I know he loved me. You know, he's just mad. Maybe I made him mad. You know, I took the blame for a lot of what happened. And everybody on the outside looking in, oh, my God, they swore he was the best thing ever. And they was like, he takes good care of you, because he never beat me in my face. He only beat me in my head. And
yeah, my abuser was the same.
And he made it his business to not hit me in my face. He would literally tell me, turn your head, I'm not going to hit you in your head, I mean your face. And he meant that. And I would want to hit him in my face because I got tired of hiding that he wasn't abusing me. I got tired. I wanted him to kill me. I said, kill me. I tried to kill myself. I took pills and I was in the hospital on suicide watch because I did not know how to leave that relationship. But what I will say for women who are in that situation, until I became empowered and I knew that I could do it, I knew I could take care of myself, I knew I could live to another day, that's when I left him. When I felt I had to encourage myself, Shonda, you can do this. You can get a job. You can get your own car. You can get your own apartment. You can do this. And because I always felt like I couldn't live in this world or take care of myself without him, because he was my provider. He gave me everything. So I had to grow up and get a job. And I got my own place, and I actually planned to leave him. And that's why I have a seminar called Exit Plan, because I literally planned out my escape from him. But it wasn't until I felt like I can do it, that's when I left. So women need to be, and that's why we have these organizations, to empower women, to know, let them know they're strong enough. You are enough. And once they learn that they are enough, and this will get a little bit pushed, that will help them to do better, even if it's helping them start school again or giving them the resources they need to, you know, find a school that they can get themselves back in and get a degree or just get a job. Women have to feel that they can take care of themselves in order to stay away from that relationship.
And that's what our program is about too, Shonda, is really just empowering women. You know, sometimes, you know, I can remember when I was being abused, I would go into work, and I've got the face on, you know, my makeup is done, my jewelry's on, I come dressed up like ain't nothing going on, but nobody knew what I was going through at home. And sometimes I remember walking in the office just going, God, if you with me, please just let somebody hug me. Or somebody would give me a smile.
Wow.
That was an indicator to me. And so I make it an effort, an extra effort, when I see people, whether it's on the elevator, if I'm in the grocery store, because you never know what that sister next to you might be going through, or that
yes.
brother even. Because even now, this is something that, you know, society now, you have a lot of women who are, quote-unquote, heads of households, and the men are, you know, stay-at-home dads. They're not working. And so there are a lot of men who are being abused, verbally, physically, because things have changed in the household. The roles have changed. And so, you know, that's why I consider myself that beacon of light, because, you know, when you have a purpose, your purpose, you know, when you come across people, you see people, my purpose is to touch them and touch them in a way, whether it's a smile or a hello, you know, because I feel that what I have gone through is not in vain. That is my purpose, is to help people overcome through that, whatever that thing is that's holding them back, whether it's domestic violence. I've lost two children. I was 5 months pregnant and had to give birth. So I've been through some stuff, you know. My abuser, he had the nerve to leave me at the altar. Go figure. But what I didn't know at the time was that rejection was for my protection.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times we go through that rejection and we're like, oh, you know, woe is me and why he left and da 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 da. No. Let him go. If he don't want to,
right.
let him go. And that helped me to see myself in a different light. No, it didn't happen overnight, because anybody's going to tell you, no, you get yourself together overnight. That's not true. And if it does, if you do something different the next day, it's just not, it's temporary. It's not permanent.
Right.
And so I had to go through a staging process where I had to, like Shonda said, I had to empower myself. I had to get help. You know, a lot of times too, especially, you know, we say, well, you know, we ain't going to no therapist because somebody might think I'm crazy. No, go to the therapist. Go and get the help
mm-hmm.
that you need. Whatever you need to do to make yourself better, to process those feelings that you're having. Because, like, you know, Shonda, like you said, you wanted to kill yourself. When I lost my son, my second son that I had to give birth to, I wanted to put that gun to my head. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was there. I was steps away from it. I was on my way there. And so when you know that you're dealing with something that you can't deal with on yourself, you need to go and get the help that you need. And whether that's God
yeah.
or whoever you feel that you need to go to, you know, you go and get that help. And don't be ashamed about it, because had I not gone through those channels and getting that therapy, I'm not sure where I would be. But that therapist,
right.
You know, helped me to channel a lot of different thoughts I was having, because when you're going through things, you know, that, and you isolate yourself, that's time for the devil to work. That's his playground, because now you don't have anyone that's speaking positiveness in your mindset. And so with therapy, through the love of Christ and people praying for me, I overcame that. And I don't care what
right.
you go through. You go through it. It's for you to go through it. Nobody else. You know, I heard something so profound today, and I'm not sure who said it. When I heard it, I think she was repeating, but when I heard it, I said, wow, that sounds like something Oprah Winfrey would say. But what she was saying, Ms. Evans, she said, you is an acronym. She sees you, you know, she sees the word you as an acronym, your own uniqueness. And then she went on to say that there is an awakening inside of you. It has been happening for a long time. You are a part of it. You didn't start it. You don't own it. It's bigger than you. It came before you. It's not about you, but it does need you. So when you're feeling emptiness and you're feeling like, you know, I went through this and it's all my fault because I chose him, don't feel that way, because there's a purpose in it. Nothing that I've gone through was for me. It was for this right here, for this channeling,
okay.
this platform, to help people be overcomers through whatever it is that they've gone through. Because there are some things that, Shonda, you've gone through that I can't go through. There are some things that I've gone through that you're not equipped to go through. But whatever that is, you're not in it alone. There's somebody else that's gone through it and that will
right.
experience it. And so, and understanding your purpose for me. My purpose is to not only tell my story, but to help someone be an overcomer through what they're going through.
Amen.
Girl, don't take me to church.
Wait, so you? Once I said that, I said, "Oh, I'm going to turn this too much, child." Because
listen, it becomes part of your, it becomes part of your nomenclature just to say those words because you know, I didn't listen. Trust me, I get it because I didn't know God in the way that I know God today. 10
now
years ago,
true.
15 years ago, 20 mm-hmm. years ago, you know, as I went through things, you know, yes, of course the enemy wanted me to believe, you know, what God, what God, because I was upset. I'm going to just let it be known, you know, I didn't want to hear no scripture after I lost my second child. Because I said, you know, how can a God, you know, allow me to have this significant loss? And I had already lost one before that. So here I am praying again. And laws. I didn't want to hear scripture. And sometimes many Christians, they make, you know, discipleship look like it's perfect, and it's not.
Right.
It's not. It's a journey. And, you know, I was angry. I was really angry at God. But, you know, through the prayers and the therapy and all that stuff, I came out of that because I was slipping into, I was going into depression. I didn't want to see a stroller. I didn't want to see none of that stuff. And I wanted to kill myself because I felt like I had nothing to live for. I felt
wow.
like, you know, I can't have kids. You know, is this how my life's gonna be? I can't have kids. Why am you know, I'm a woman. I'm supposed to be able to reproduce. And here's my second pregnancy. I got halfway and I lost my son. Breathed for a
wow.
few minutes. But even that right there is a purpose and it's a ministry in itself because there are many women who have infidelity problems. I lost my first child because my husband, who I was with at the time, he was abusive too, my first husband. So it wasn't until, you know, you have to really come into your own. And sometimes you can't do that on your own. You got to go
right.
and get the help that you need.
I wanted to ask you all, both of you all went through this trial and these tribulations, and then all of a sudden, because everybody's not made like you are, everybody's not out to share their story. There are still women that are living in the shame. There are still women
mm-hmm.
living in the thought of people even knowing about it or even allowing family and friends to even get a whiff of the fact. A lot, both of you all both said that you were embarrassed by it. You know, that's really canny because you guys come from two different backgrounds, two different scenarios. I don't know. I mean, why did you feel embarrassed? And the other question is, from that, what allowed you to be lifted away from that embarrassment and become the queens that you are now, that you are
mm-hmm.
fierce now? Both of you all are fierce. You know, what was the transition for both of you all, each one of you all?
I was embarrassed.
I couldn't.
She said, why were we embarrassed? And you said, why were we embarrassed and how do we become, I'm sorry, I forgot.
And how did we become as fierce as we are today?
Right.
That's
right.
Like
yeah. that.
Well, I mean,
well,
you know, I was embarrassed. Oh, go ahead, Shonda.
Okay. Well, I was embarrassed, but I also was in fear for him because I had cousins and brothers who they knew would hurt him. I protected him a lot. That's why I didn't want to tell a lot of times. And then when I felt that I wanted to say some things to some people, I felt they would just look at me as if I was stupid, pretty much. And why are you there? Like, no one, he's not, because I would tell myself, leave. He's not holding you hostage. Why are you here? So what I would tell myself, I would think people would tell me that. And that to me was more embarrassing than to just sit here and put my face on and act like we're in this great relationship. And like I said, only became empowered, or I felt what I would say fierce as I am now, is by sharing my story. And why I started sharing my story is because someone asked me at a college, he was having Women's History Month, a Heritage Month or something, and they needed a survivor to share their story. I panicked before I even got there. I was somebody asked me, I'm not telling anybody that I went through that, especially a room full of strangers. I'm like, oh no, I'm not doing that. And I just felt like God was tugging on me to tell my story. You went through this, and now it's time for you to help somebody else to get out of it. Tell someone how you got out. Tell someone how. Like, I had friends that were murdered by their husbands. I had two friends, as a matter of fact, that were murdered by their husbands around a couple of years before that time. And I went back to thinking about them when I was asked to speak, and I was like, well, Lord, what if I don't tell my story and something happens to someone? You know what I mean? Maybe I need to tell what happened. And when I told my story for the very first time, I cried from the beginning to the end, because it's like you're replaying the situations back over and over again. To me, it felt like he was going to walk in that room any minute and scare me to shut up. It was the most scariest thing ever. But once I told my story the first time, the second time was easier, and the third time was easier. And I finally got to the point where I could tell my story without crying. Sometimes I get a little emotional because, you know, you remember. It's the residue that Valerie was talking about. It doesn't just go away. But now I'm able to tell my story without crying, but also, too, it's effective enough that people come up to me and tell me, thank you for sharing your story. I know someone in this situation, and I know how to help them. Or I was in this situation, or I'm in this situation, and I need to learn. I need to know how to leave. So every time you hear someone tell you, thank you for sharing your story, it empowers you even more to tell it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I concur. Valerie,
you go ahead.
Yeah, I concur. Yeah, no, I mean, part of the same reasons, you know, I was embarrassed because, you know, then people will look at you and stand in judgment. We're like, how could somebody like you choose somebody like that? And then why would you stay for so long? Are you crazy?
Oh,
because, and that's the thing too, you know, when you a lot of survivors, you know, the fear is that people will sit in judgment of you, and that people will ask you questions that you might not feel like answering. Listen, I was there. I just need your help. I just need you to listen to me. Because sometimes I tell people, especially when I'm doing my domestic violence workshop, if you know someone who's being abused, don't take it upon yourself to walk in that house and help them get out of there. Don't,
right.
Because if he abused her, what's the likelihood that he won't abuse you too? You know, that survivor, as much as you may love that person, I've seen it where people have gone to help somebody out and the person goes right back the same night or the next day.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing that you can do for that survivor is be a listening ear and give them the resources that they need. Give them the phone number. Give them the address to go. But when you, because I think people get, you know, they go in and they go in and help that person get out. That person goes back the next day. Now they're angry with the survivor because, you know, now you stupid for going back. And now I'm going to go tell everybody that this man is beating on you. And that's why the survivor kind of stays secluded and don't tell anybody, because they're going to sit in judgment first. They're fearful that they're going to sit in judgment. And then you also have, I don't have any brothers, but my father, you know, my father and I are very close. And I didn't tell him. And it broke my heart to see my father, you know, go through knowing about what I went through, because he wasn't an absent father. I was raised in a home with my father. But I did not want my father to go to jail behind my choices, behind my decisions. So I didn't say anything, okay? But, you know, I would say the thing that makes me serious today, this is my get back. This is my get back, because there, I can't, you know, I'm not going to go beat on him or seek revenge or get somebody to go and hit him or that. No, my get back is to help other women become free from these type of relationships. That's my get back.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And,
wow.
And that's what keeps me going. And part of that is, like Shonda said, you know, every time that somebody sends you a inbox or email or tells you, or you hug them, you embrace them, they're in tears, they're released, they're freed just because of something you said, that makes you go even harder, because you were there where they were, and you realize that your words have the ability, just your words and your story has the ability to help someone be free. That is the most. And you don't even do, for me, I don't even do things to get that. I do it because, like I said, this is my get back. I don't do it expecting anything in return. But when a person tells me, Valerie, thank you so much, or when I wrote that book, realizing that, you know, my book can be purchased in all different countries. So when that survivor reads that book, or they read that book and they know someone who's going through, and they give it to them, my prayer is that somebody will hear the message and will become free. You know, even down to, you know, children that grow up around, you know, domestic violence, and, you know, they also believe it's normal, right? It becomes a sense of normalcy for them. And that's what led me to write my first children's book, Life Lessons with Jasmine and Lady B, Love Does Not Hurt, because there are a lot of children that grow up in these environments. They don't understand really what's going on, but that that psychological aspect of seeing, you know, the crying or hearing the noise when you think the child is asleep and they're and they're wide awake, and you're, you know, you can't see what's going on with that child when they're in school, when they're not performing well. They're upset, they're angry. Well, while the parents thought the child was asleep, the child is awake, hearing mommy scream or hearing daddy scream, whoever. And that's what really wanted, you know, forced me to gave me the unction to write that book, especially when I had, you know, had my own son. I have a 2-year-old son now, thank God. I finally got a child of my own. But, you know, starting these children's books, it's a series of children's books, because it's a children's book, but there are also subliminal messages in there for parents. Because, you know, as you're parenting, you know, we tell our children, you know, what happens in this house stays in this house. Who hasn't heard that before? Well, how can you expect
Jasmine?
Right, exactly. But how can you expect Jasmine to know and to decipher, you know, to tell what Johnny broke, as opposed to when Uncle Johnny was abusing her? You tell the child what happens in this house stays in this house. A child doesn't, you know, sometimes you might have a child who's able to tell and know that something is wrong with that. But how can they psychologically know that I'm supposed to tell, and, you know, or I'm supposed to keep this a secret? So, you know, these children's books, there are subliminal messages in there for the parents as well, because it's not just, you know, about the adults. You've got to start young. There's a another organization here in Broward County, Broward in Palm Beach County. It's called ByWhy, and it's Because I'm Worth It, and their focus is on young children, you know, because there's a lot of children who are in school that are just mean. You know, my self-esteem, when I started looking way back and going way back to how did I think that this abuse was okay, you know, but when I thought back to it, when I was in elementary school, I used to get picked on all the time. So when I met this 275-pound, bright-skinned, handsome 6'3", I'm saying to myself, he wants me?
Mm-hmm.
So it looked good, because, you know, I'm like, okay, he's handsome and everything. Let me work this out. And I knew he had some issues too, because any man that abuses a woman, he's got some self-inflicted issues going on inside. There's something
Absolutely.
Going on there, and he was a product of, you know, his father was a married man who had a relationship with his mother, and he was born. So he grew up with a father that rejected him, didn't want anything to do with him. And his mother kind of, you know, didn't do too much with him either once he got up a certain age. So he was dealing with a lot, and I thought I was I was the savior. I'm coming with my cape, and I'm going to be here to support you. I'm your ride or die. I'm not going to leave your side no matter what you do. So I took on that responsibility thinking that I could change him. Ladies, you cannot change him. No, right.
Uh-huh.
You cannot change him. The person you have the ability to change is yourself. And sometimes what people say, well, you know, I met the representative. No. You met his personality. You didn't get to know his character. Okay?
Wow.
Personality is the goat. He's the life of the party, and everybody think he's good looking, smell good, all this other kind of stuff. But what about his character? Get to know a man's character, not his personality. And be your own change agent, because let me tell you, you can't change him. I don't care how good you cook. I don't care how much you buy him. I don't care how much you love on him. You cannot change him, so don't even try. Because I sat there thinking that I could change him. I could erase all this stuff that was going on with him internally, and I could not, and neither can you. Change yourself. Work on changing you. And when your outlook of yourself changes, then the people that you surround yourself will change as well.
And you know, that's
I had
what,
a question.
Some national. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, because I'm, you know, as I listen to the ladies, I'm thinking back. Is there a scenario? Because I remember, like, on a couple occasions, meeting or dating women that had been in abusive relationships, and when we may have had a disagreement or maybe got into a heated argument, like one of the first things out of their mouth was, "Well, hit me then." You know what I mean? And they were like, actually, like they wanted me to hit them.
Mm-hmm.
And because
mm-hmm.
I didn't comply, it almost like they separated from me. And I was, you know, I was like, I mean, I study psychology and I study human interaction, so I got it. But is there some type of situation or some type of what level of thinking are they? Obviously, they haven't healed yet, but I just wanted to put that out there.
Sure. I think in those type of scenarios, there's a sense of normalcy that comes with that, because I'll tell you, even when I was in my abusive relationship, even when things were good, there was a point in time where I pushed his buttons because I knew what was going to happen next. It does happen. So it becomes a sense of normalcy. You know, things are going great, but, you know, I want to fight a little bit.
Wow.
As crazy as it sounds, it does happen, and that's a reality. And that's why I said, you know, when you encounter these type of relationships, you know, and I won't get into spirits and all that stuff because that's a little deep for this conversation. But you know, when you get into that type of relationship, you know, there are certain behaviors that will trickle down, right? And like you said, you know, even if you didn't want her to go there. She wanted you to go there because in her mind, and I don't know, but in her, whether it was that relationship that she was in or what she grew up with, she may have grown up with that type of abuse to where it was just, that was her reality. And that was might have thought, that might be what she equated love to be. You know, I'm not sure, but it does happen.
Well, I remember this study where they were saying that at a certain point, if you don't realize it, the abuse becomes, like you said, a state of normalcy. And on a lower level of your subconscious, you don't even realize it, but it becomes a form of stimulation because you're used to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So when you're taken out of it
you.
Without realizing it, you start seeking it because you need that. You haven't, like you said, you haven't healed yet. So you're looking for that thing that you're used to, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just wanted to kind of just bring that out there.
Mm-hmm. It's just like even when Shonda was saying, like when she would get abused, and she knew after it would happen, the gifts would come. So you know, she could have, you know, and Shonda, I'm not gonna speak for you, but you know, even that, you expected that gift to come later, you know?
Yeah. Yes, I did. You know, and like I say, he used it as a tactic, you know what I mean? And then like, when I would leave him, he would find me a couple of days later. Either he would be aggressive when he found me, or he would come bearing gifts. and and then the tears, and then the, you know, I love you, and
I'm
married.
Sorry.
I want my wife back, and you know what I mean. So the guilt trip, and I'm leaving him. How could I do this to him? You know, making me feel bad. So all of that was a pattern. It was a sick cycle that kept going on, and it happened, and it happened. When you're giving a 17, 18, 19-year-old gifts, and you buy her everything, of course I'm going to think that's what was supposed to happen, because that's all I've known.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's all I've known was to get gifts from him, and to get, I know that when he's done beating on me, I'm going to be all right. You know what I mean? He's not going to kill me this time. Let me just deal with this for this couple of minutes, and then he'll leave me alone. You know what I mean? And that, that's why I talk to teenagers now, and I go around talking to the youth, because I was them. You know what I mean? I thought it was cute for an older man to buy me things and make me feel like I'm his woman. And I really, you know, want to talk to, I talk to our young men and I talk to our young women, because boys get abused. Men get abused as well, boys as well, and they don't think so. They don't think they can be abused. When I talk to the youth, first thing they say, you know, the guys are like, hey, can't no girl put their hands on me. Can't no girl beat me. You know, I'm telling them, she don't have to beat you. She could pull a gun out on you and shoot you. She could stab you. You know, women can be very controlling. You know what I'm saying? So it could, it depends on the situation. And if she's controlling and telling you what to do, where to go, and you listening, you're in the verbally abusive relationship. So, you know, it happens, and, you know, I thank God for both of us getting out. And I know it's about that time. I thank God for both of us getting out and finding our voices and being able to help other survivors. So, Valerie, if you can, tell everyone how they can reach you.
Oh,
go ahead, Karima.
So, I just want to make sure everybody who's listening, the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence take a stand against domestic violence. There is a hotline that you can call. It's 1-800-799-7233. You can also visit our website at AtlantaMixRadio.com. You can give us a call. We are issuing safe houses with the understanding that the radio stations, the terrestrial radio stations, are going to be places. And that's a movement that I feel like we need to do, because women are running in the middle of the night and no place to go. Radio stations are typically open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so we're looking at being able to have safe places for women to go to.
Awesome.
So I want everybody to know that the woman's station, Atlanta Mix Radio, this is what our premises is. This is what we do. The woman's station is what it says on the tin. We promote women. The Next Level is our vice president also, who's on with us out of Nashville. I want to thank individuals that are listening in, because, you know, I am so ecstatic that a lot of things are changing. The climate is changing, where people are starting to engage a little bit more into domestic violence. But you got to have people that's willing to roll up their sleeves and get in the trenches. It's like a mega church. They always say that only, you know, you got 1,600 members, and out of that 1,600 members, 100 of them are doing the work for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, so they doing all the work, and everybody else.
Yeah, that's the Bible study crew.
So, you know.
that's the Bible study crew.
Okay, so we're doing the work at the woman's station. We're providing the solutions, we're providing the platform, and this is not something that we're doing in lieu of trying to get notability or anything. I am myself, my mom, and my sister were part of a domestic violence family coming up. All my life, I watched my father beat my mother. And then after a while, he started to beat me and my sister. So this is something that is a part of something that that's shared when it comes to the mother and watching my mother flourish and then be able to find her second husband, who is the man of her dreams, that is giving her the love and being her friend, like Shonda's husband who stalked her. You know, y'all seen that Facebook post talking about you stalking me. And he like, okay,
about you stalking me on your page. That man is not stalking you, you old crazy girl.
I'm talking about my current
anyway,
husband, George.
Yeah, the current husband. Yeah, Mr. Roberts himself. We want to thank him for allowing the pull for you from the family and everything. And congratulations on your son. You know, raising good young men through the ordeals that you go through, that takes a class, a hell of a woman. You know, my brother, they don't put their hands on women. I can beat Mario up, sit on him, and all he gonna do is just be like,
anyway.
You know what, girl, you crazy. Get off me. You know, I'm like,
hey,
move out the way
then.
So, you know, I bully my brothers,
too.
And they don't say nothing.
Hey, Karima, let me share something with the ladies. What I noticed too, there could be a red flag, and maybe they'll concur. Like for me, for instance, we can't let certain things be excuses, because there are certain things that we're not going to be able to undo. Like for instance, I don't know my father, but a lot of times what I noticed that, with individuals who have been abusive to women, they usually have a horrible relationship with their mother. Maybe when they were younger, their mother was abusive to them because their father wasn't there, and they were blaming them for this, that, and the other, or they didn't have it together. And one sign that I think you should all look at is how is this man's relationship with his mother? You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? Because a man who disrespects his mother and talks to her any kind of way, that should be a real red flag for you to get on out, because he doesn't have a barometer. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like me,
yeah.
He'll tell you. Karima can tell you, I love my mama, because the men who love their mom seek out those qualities in women that reminds him of the woman that he loves, you know, more
right.
than anything in the world. And I think if he's been in an abusive relationship, he may seek out those qualities to, in his mind, he's lashing out at his mother that I had an opportunity to do through the woman that he's with now. I'm not making no excuses for nobody. I'm just telling the ladies that is a red flag. If he can't get it together with his mom, y'all might want to rethink that whole situation.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And Shonda, you were asking about my contact information.
Yes.
I can be reached. My website is www.ladybefree.org. And our toll free number is 855-585-FREE-3733. We're also on Facebook at Lady Be Free Resource. And check us out. Go to our website. We have freedom calls once a month, the 15th of every month, where we call in and I give a few words of encouragement and empowerment for women. In addition to that, on April 7th, my book will be going to production. So we will have a play April 7th in North Miami at the Little Haiti Cultural Center. So check us out. Visit our website. We put up postings there with things that's going on. My books can be purchased on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. The first is Reflection of a Survivor. And the children's book is Life Lessons with Jasmine and Lady B. Love Does Not Hurt.
Yay!
Thank you guys so much
for
having me. I truly appreciate the opportunity to get the word out.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, very much. Thank you. We're going to be bringing your play to Atlanta, too, so just get ready, y'all.
Don't tell me that, because I'll be in Atlanta Thursday. I'll be in Atlanta for a couple of days on I come in on Thursday night, but we'll definitely you know, you have my contact information. Reach out. Let's talk.
Better work. You guys, we want to also thank Ms. Shonda Roberts, Pain to Purpose, for putting this show together. Shonda, please tell everybody how to contact you as well.
Yes, I can be reached at the website is pain2purpose76.org. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at pain2purpose76. Our phone number is 305-791-3417.
All right, and one of the other things is that the gentleman that's on if one of your is going to be doing a fundraiser for Pain the Purpose here in Atlanta for a pre-Valentine's Day show, the Next Level. We are taking our proceeds and donating that to Pain the Purpose so we can get the engines rolling for Miss Lady. But if y'all will sit back, if you could just give us 5 minutes, I'm going to put Mario on the spot. I want you to do a piece for the lady that really talks about. Don't do all me. Nothing. Right. You didn't think I had something in mind when I told you to call in.
All right. I should have known.
So go ahead.
Okay. All right, ladies. So, you know, the show that we're going to be doing is really about admiration and paying homage to our women, you know, and everything that you do on a day-to-day basis that we see and that we don't see. So I'm going to do this piece called This Flower for y'all. I hope y'all like it. It was like one of my mom's favorite pieces, and I did it at her funeral when she passed and everybody, you know. So anyway.
Okay.
Here it is. This flower, placed within the garden of this earth, exhibiting an inner and outer beauty so astounding, I dare not limit it to the words that only I could express, you see. Her beauty is worthy of every interpretation that could be given. Even still, it would not completely capture what she creates in all those who cross her path. This flower, so flawless in form that even her imperfections are perfect. Truly a masterpiece created by the hands of God. So alluring that one glance leaves you breathless. The second leaves you heartless because she has stolen every impulse that you will ever experience regarding love, only to give it back to you tenfold. With a smile so brilliant, it would blind you. So warm, it would melt the coldest heart of any whose eyes meet hers. So inviting, it shatters all resistance, enslaving you to her will until she sees fit to set you free. This flower, displaying vibrant hues of femininity, radiant pastels of passion and sensuality, perfectly blended to such a magnitude that their effects scream through the hollow souls of those who once knew love but have forgotten its name. She serves as their reminder. And in closing, I'd just like to say that just because one flower's been chosen from the garden doesn't mean that the remaining flowers are any less beautiful and masterpiece. Thank you.
Awesome.
Wow, that was awesome.
Beautiful. That was beautiful.
Yes, it was. Thank you so much. That was nice.
You're welcome. So we'll be doing, I got a whole show just dedicated to hopefully making y'all smile and making y'all feel good about who you are and letting you know that there's a few brothers out here who still recognize y'all and appreciate you for who you all are.
Well, praise the Lord.
Yes, brothers. I'm waiting on my husband right now. I'm waiting. This time I'm letting God see.
Keep on waiting, honey. Wait patiently. Wait on the Lord. He will send you who
Trust
you need.
Me, I am. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you guys, we want to thank everybody for tuning in to Pain the Purpose with Ms. Shonda Roberts, author Ms. Valerie Brown on our WMRDB advocacy. Y'all stay with us for a little bit. We got some commercials. Ladies, you guys can go ahead, but we're going to play a couple commercials and a couple songs, and then we will be up out of here for the evening time. So please do not forget to tune in into our app. You'll be able to hear this rebroadcast 24 hours a day on the www.AtlantaMixRadio website. And so we thank you all for tuning in. So this is the promo from the Valentine's Day birthday by the Next Level.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
What's
What's up, y'all? I'm the next level, inviting you to come chill with me at the Back to Intimacy pre-Valentine's Day event, featuring love, sensual poet extraordinaire, me, the next level, performing live at Club 6340, Riverdale GA's hotspot for the grown and sexy, February 11th, 2018, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., located at 6340 Highway 85, Riverdale, GA 30274. Contact us at 404-392-4273. Dress to impress.
Menstrual cycles aren't funny. Period.
The government provides homeless shelters with condoms, but not tampons.
Without proper feminine hygiene products, women are forced to use brown paper bags.
In 2016, over 200,000 women were homeless in the U.S.
It's bloody serious.
Period.
Okay, you guys, welcome back. Hey, Max, we really appreciate you dropping by today. Tell us a little bit about the show that's going to be taking place, man.
Well, I'm really excited about it. Like I said, it's really an opportunity for the ladies to come and just be shown some love and admiration. I'll be doing a whole set. I'll be not only poetry, but it'll be accompanied with original music that I put together. And I think it's just going to be a really great time. Every time I've done the show, you know, women have really enjoyed it. One time I did it, they even stayed and helped clean up. I'm not thinking that's what everybody going to do, but they just enjoyed hanging out, and they just didn't want to leave. So I just hope that I'm meditating on really putting out a performance, like I said, that will make you guys feel, you know, good about who you are. Not that you already do, but you don't. But I just want to kind of like just reiterate, like I said, that there are brothers out here who do get it. You know, we understand what y'all are going through, and we really appreciate y'all. And I've just been blessed by the Creator to be able to put it into words. But I know that I'm just a conduit that His grace moves through. So I just want to share my gift with y'all. November 11th at the go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, so this basically is a special tribute to the HBCU sororities, ain't it?
Yes, HBU sororities, women who with a high school degree, high school diploma, GED, whatever, man. We just want to show all of y'all love. You know what I mean? Because everybody needs love. Because you know what you know me, Karima. I don't have to tell you my story, but I deal with a lot of women from different walks of life, education, and I realized that what these ladies were talking about is just not limited to a certain class, an educational class of women. Women from all walks of life go through this, and I just think, like I said, we just want to provide, you know, for those 2 hours, just a safe place for y'all to fall and just be, like I said, admired, loved, and feel appreciated. I just want everybody to come out, man, and enjoy themselves and have a good time. And hopefully it'll be the beginning of some more things that we have lined up. But this will be our kickoff show. I'm a little nervous. You know, I've been rehearsing and everything like that, but I really want to do a good show. It's not really about me. It's really about, like I said, the energy I feel when I'm in the room with those ladies, and they're just, you know, absorbing the energy that the Creator has given me to share with them. So I'm looking forward to it, and I hope that everybody who has an opportunity that's in that area can come out. And it's not only for the ladies, you know, it could be couples or whatever. You know, I've done a couple shows, and you know, the brothers seem to like my work just as much, you know, because sometimes, you know, we as men nowadays may not know how to express themselves, you know, like they might not be able to articulate exactly how they're feeling. So, you know, I just say, hey,
yeah,
let me speak
boy.
For y'all. You know what I mean? It's like the brother might not be able to articulate exactly what he's feeling, but I'm his mouthpiece. So I'm representing his emotion. If he brought you here, he's feeling what I'm saying. So, you know what I mean? So, yeah, that's a good thing. I'm
Absolutely.
Looking forward to it. I'm really excited.
Yeah, so that's going to be at 6340 Highway 85 in Riverdale, Georgia. We got 3 VIP sections that's off to the corners. Champagne bottles. You can contact me directly to get a rate on a party of 10. VIP, popping bottles, all of that. So we got 3. We got the Remy Room VIP area, and we got 2 other special VIP areas. For those of you all that want to come in a group, please contact me at 678-789-6095. The tickets are actually $20 online, or $15 online, $20 at the door. Proceeds are going to be going to paying the purpose in the domestic violence movement, as well as some portions of it to a shelter here in Atlanta, in Decatur, Georgia.
Oh, wow.
That we, at the radio station, did constantly, you know, support and stuff. So we can't give the identity where that is at. But we want to thank you, Next, for doing this for the ladies and everything. So this is something
no
that we're
problem,
doing.
Man. No problem. I'm excited.
And moving
forward. I didn't know you had a Remy room. I'm going to stay out of there, though, till after the show.
we're going to do that one. But, yeah, we're going to get up out of here. We're going to play. I'm hoping that we get you back on the show so we can get maybe some of your music up so people can see what they're missing and stuff. But we're going to close it down with Still in Love with DeMonica Fly, another commercial. And I want to thank her as well. She has a show that's going on in Minnesota tonight, so y'all might want to check her out. DeMonica Fly, Still in Love. We listen to The Next Level, Pain to Purpose, Shonda Roberts, and Valerie Brown was on our Domestic Violence Advocacy Show. So you guys have a good night, and we'll be checking y'all out Wednesday for our Trans Women Network. Thursday, we'll be having a show with Marlene Dow. Friday, Next Level. We'll be out of here. Thank you all for listening.
Thoughts of you, they dance around inside. Isn't it wonderful?
Feel